Architecture Talks, the podcast about architecture from Jung.
If you do not change your building technologies, then you can lay off 65% of your employees within the next 10 years.
Business as usual is no longer an option. We are facing ecological problems of unprecedented dimensions and complexity, and all of them are self-inflicted. The construction industry is contributing to global warming like no other industry. Today, a large proportion of climate-damaging emissions are caused by construction, so the industry also has a responsibility to develop solutions for the construction of tomorrow. Werner Sobeck is known for his pointed statements, the sharpness of which serve to remind, enlighten, and at the same time, point the way to the future. Resource and energy consumption, research into new construction methods, and also the impact of construction on achieving the goals of the Paris Agreement on climate change are all topical issues, with the pandemic exacerbating the explosiveness of some of them. The worldwide standstill and the current shortage of materials have made it clear to us how dependent we are also locally on the global economic cycle. The fact that we need to shape our future more consciously and more actively than has happened so far should be a concern for everyone. In our podcast today, we, Katrina Varga and Janis Lavich, will talk to Professor Dr. Werner Sobeck about the questions, viewpoints, and global connections that arise for him from this discussion.
Hello and welcome to today's Jung Architecture Talks podcast. Thank you for joining us today, Mr. Sobeck.
Hello and good morning.
You have formulated a sentence that at first glance has little to do with building. The world's population is growing at an average rate of 2.6 people per second. This number is both small and frightening at the same time. Is the world's population growing too quickly or too slowly? Or is it too unevenly distributed?
A net increase of the world's population of 2.6 is the actual situation. It is as it is. Population growth will decrease because of effects we might touch later. However, it is difficult to predict when this will happen and to which extent. We all live on one planet, so there is no question about whether the growth is distributed unevenly or not. Food, at least, might be distributed to any place in the world without big efforts. The questions are, will there be enough food? Or is a rising temperature reducing crop yield? What is the impact of those people on our planet? Here we have to clearly state that it is the so-called industrial nations, especially some calling themselves leading nations, the inhabitants of which have the most negative impact on our planet. Means consumption of resources, waste production, and emissions. So there's a big difference between someone being born in Ethiopia and someone being born in the so-called industrial countries.
Already today, half of all people, that means 3.8 billion, live in Asia on about one-third of the available area. Statistically speaking, the consumption of building materials per capita worldwide is 115 tons per capita, and Germany, 490 tons, far too high for the limited area available.
Yes and no. I think the problem is another one. If I might correct the number 115, which I have been publishing for years, we did some new calculations and we finally ended it in 2020. We have to base our statements on a tonnage of 150 tons average capita in the world and 490 tons in Germany as well as in the other industrial nations. So the increase, if we go back to this 2.6 number, which is the most important number of our times, the increase of 2.6 people per second necessitates to scratch building material out of the planet's surface, out of the ground, in the range of depending on which level you want to provide those young people. Might it be the level of an industrial country or a third world country, or what would we decide upon? Should they have a permanent access to fresh water, waste management, access to health and education or not? So this means that we have to scratch out material per second in the range between 800 and 1,300 metric tons. This is, if we look at the availability of the resources, not possible. And if it would be possible, and we look at the processing of those material, transport not included, just transforming the raw material into building components, this would cause emissions, which would necessitate to change the objective of 1.5 or 2 to 4 or 5 or 6 degree. An unimaginable amount of emissions which will be caused by the production of this material. But up to now, we have been speaking about the newly borns, yeah? The people we are welcoming every second, which is 4.4 and 1.8 are dying, so the net increase is 2.6. There's another issue nobody is really talking about, and this is the people living in the third world. Actually, this is 80% of the world's population. And these people own round about 70 tons of building material per capita. 70 tons, half of which is residential and non-residential buildings, and the other half is infrastructure. This is plenty of material, 70 tons, but on the other side, it is so little, it is quite obvious that these people have no access, no permanent access at least, to fresh and clean water supply, that they have no sewage plants, they have no waste management, they have no access to schools, university, and to health. So if we now would like to lift them up to a level of living which coincides more or less with a level of building material consumption, and we say, okay, everyone in this world should have our standard, this would mean then that we have to build the already existing world, the already existing built environment, two times more. And this would cause the absolute collapse. So we learn two things out of this, three things. Number one, nobody is speaking about it. Number two, if we look at the net increase, it is hardly, very difficult to be done. And number three, the 6.3 billion people which do not have access to living standards, where we are always talking on our at least Sunday morning speeches that they should have. If they would have, this would be the total chaos on the planet, environmentally spoken, the total chaos. So it is brutal, but clear, it is not doable.
That brings us to the topic of resource consumption and material availability. You say construction is a greedy consumer of resources. Let's start with a definition question. What is a resource and what is waste?
Okay, resource. It depends a little bit in which language we are talking, but the general understanding is that resource is a material which is available with a certain effort, with a certain financial effort, typically. Our society is all based on financial numbers. So if you can afford it, it makes sense, and then it's called resources. There is, of course, plenty of material deeper in the ground of our planet, which is not that easy to be, let's say, brought upwards. This is not called a resource, at least not in the German language. And then waste. I would say there is no waste, since everything might be reduced in whatever way. So, however, there is this definition, which at the end means that it makes no sense under financial aspects to recycle and reduce something. And then it is called waste. But if you would have on the one hand side enough money or on the other side another moral position, this type of waste would not exist. As we know from all, let's say, societies, which we call third or fourth world societies, yeah? People living in whatever forest in Borneo or so, they have no waste dump. They are in the Amazonas Delta. The term waste is an unknown word because they use and reuse everything permanently. So they live in a certain coincidence with nature, and this is what we are failing to do, and this is our problem. So we produce materials which could be reused, but only under the investment of a huge amount of money. And this is what we don't do because we call this non-economical. This is the next term. I do not really like to speak out clearly because this economical thing is damaging our world. The capitalization of everything, this is the problem. And then, of course, especially also in the building industry, because building industry stands for the largest amount of consumption of raw materials. It's about 60% of all resources which are consumed by the building industry. And if we look at the mineral resources, it's close to 80%. So building industry is the number one resource consumer. And the way we use those resources very often transforms them directly from a clear and clean material to toxic stuff. You have concrete, which is very fine. This is non-toxic. You can take the concrete and throw it in the forest and so on. It will not damage anything. But then you start painting the concrete, yeah, and then you use some whatever thermal insulating material onto the concrete. Yeah, the wallpaper, the color on the wallpaper. Then you include into especially the external walls, electric wiring, plumbing, etc., etc. And at the end, if you analyze the exterior wall of a typical residential building, you find easily between 15 and 25 different materials, which are all sticking together and which are glued together, which is great for the contractor because it dramatically reduces his legal problems. Nothing falls apart. Everything sticks together. It's also good for the architect, but it is the hell for the next generation because it's nothing else than toxic waste.
The question of resource consumption has only partially reached the minds of architects. What if, for example, sand runs out of construction or raw materials such as zinc or tin run out because deposits are exhausted? What if the global distribution of raw materials comes to a halt?
We all know, at least those which read the scientific publications since 40 years, that it will come to a halt. We know that we are running out of copper, especially under the aspect of electric cars. Then the total change of our energy providing system, when we announce a -55%, now -65% reduction of emissions, this means if we focus on the building industry, that we cannot heat our warm water in our buildings any longer in 10 to 15 years with coal, with oil, or with pellets. So this is then a transition, a big step within a super short period of time to something which is based on electricity. I call that the step to the electric city. The electric city is something great because the buildings don't have chimney anymore, the air is clean, and so on and so on. But the question is, where does the electricity come from? And it is not only talking about power plants and whatever, nuclear power plants and so on and so on, and all those discussions. It is also, and this is an aspect which is as important, the grids themselves. The actual existing grids consisting of copper wires and so on will never be capable, never, to transfer the amounts of electricity we are talking about. So it means you have to increase the grids by factors 3 to 5, and nobody knows where the copper should come from, and nobody knows who should build those grids within 10 years, especially in a country where everyone is filing the lawsuits against everyone, yeah? Not in my backyard. Yeah, please green current, please green electricity, but no power line in my backyard. So this is a very important issue. And then the other thing is to come back to the question, when it comes to a halt, yeah, then we need either to stop building or we have to dramatically change our building technologies. It is very simple and nobody speaks it out clearly. If the government announced that we have to decrease our emissions in 10 years by 65%, I translate that into another language, in the building people language. If you do not change your building technologies, then you can lay off 65% of your employees within the next 10 years, because there will be a limitation in the use of material. This is quite easy. Either the politicians take it serious and do not only formulate the headline, but double check whether this is really, let's follow it up. And if they double check, they come to the conclusion, okay, now we have August, and the content of what is allowed to be emitted is consumed. And then you have to stop building. And then the revolution begins. The surprising moment is that obviously nobody is realizing that.
That's somehow scary. You said that we must change our approach to construction. So we've known this for a long time. Renewable raw materials, new materials, and construction methods. There is a lot of research and build examples relating to these. But you also say there's not enough timber in the world. So there is not enough timber in the world. Why is our dream of creating the built world with wood not coming true? And which countries can serve as role models?
To answer the last question first, I do not see any country which can serve as a role model. The question with the wood is, see, I'm not really happy to be the person who speaks up clearly and who transports all those negative, let's say, limiting factors. The surprising thing for me is that nobody else is doing it. Something I really don't understand, except the people of the IPCC, but they do that in another context and with another complexity. But if you break it down to the single sectors, as we call it, and we go to the building sectors, I don't see anyone who covers in his thoughts and in his thinking and in his talking the entity of what we are actually talking about. So from the material consumption to the waste production and from the energy consumption, okay, energy can't be consumed, from the energy use to the emissions cost. It is not that difficult, but nobody is doing it. Nobody is doing it. And it is not out there in the heads and minds of the people. And this is what I'm totally surprised about, because we are running out of time, number one. And if the people do not change their way to design and to build our buildings, then they will run out of business. So it's an existential question to change methods and tools and technologies within a short period of time. But nobody's talking about it. There's a little bit of blah, blah about Nachhaltigkeit and so on. And everyone is using the wrong words. Everyone is talking about renewable energy. So energy is not renewable. Yeah? In Germany, everyone is talking about Lebenszyklus. Okay, a building does not live in a cycle, is something. In Germany, a Zyklus is something which returns in a precise, let's say, frequency. This is a Zyklus. So what is a Lebenszyklus of a building? I don't know. And I could continue referring to such expressions, which are nothing else than, I call that fog bombs, to make it not understandable to regular people outside down there in the marketplace. The newest term is virtual water. Sounds quite scientifically, but regular people outside there will, of course, not understand what it is. So I ask the question, is it really necessary to introduce such terms or to just speak up clearly in the language we are talking to each other? Coming back to this thing with the wood, yeah? Frankly spoken, 4 or 5 years ago, I was running on the same track. I told my architects and engineers, we have to change to building with wood because this is the future and there's plenty of wood and blah, blah, which is not true, because I then started studying forestry science and found out that you cannot get out of the forests in the entire world that much wood as we need it for our building industry. Actually, human mankind nowadays consumes between 60 and 100 gigatons per year. And this number is significantly increasing. If you look at the predictions of the World Bank, of the International Energy Agency, etc., they talk about numbers of 200 to 300 in 10 years. And now I took the effort to analyze the forest situation on the planet. And we calculated how much timber can you get out of those forests if you do it in a sustainable way. And this is not more than 10 gigatons per year. So we need 60, 100 and even more, and all the forests in the world together. If we squeeze them out to the limit, then we have 10 gigatons of timber. And there's also paper industry. and there is billions of people cooking their daily food and their houses, warming their houses with wood. So we cannot take away all the wood they consume, and we still need some paper and whatever, and the cellulose fibers, etc. So there is a market which is not that soft. The market is divided into different sectors of the use of wood, and we cannot rubber in other sectors and segments. So what is left over for the building industry means that there is 10 gigatons of timber per year, which is a big number, and we should use it in the optimal way. This does not mean that we build a house from the top to the bottom all out of wood. This is complete nonsense, because wood is great for certain ways of applications and other ones. Concrete is far better, and concrete, by the way, is not toxic. We just have to work and to build with concrete in a more conscious way. And there again, there is this problem of capitalization of everything. Nowadays, it does not interest people whether a concrete wall is 24 or 30 centimeters thick, because it does not cost that much more. Concrete is cheap. And in order to avoid any legal problems later on, architects as well as contractors prefer to make the things a little bit thicker and fatter, so they think they might stand longer, which is, of course, not true, but this is the way the people think. Yeah? In Germany, viel hilft viel. But this is responsible for a plus in the consumption of material, which is completely unnecessary. So if you reduce the amount of material in a building to the level which is really needed, you can easily save 20 to 30%. This is already something, 20 to 30. It's a two-digit number. And being a checking engineer means getting the calculations and the drawings of colleagues on my table every day. I know what I'm talking about. Needed 10, okay, we make 30. Then I'm on the safe side. My question, if you need 10, why don't you make it 10? Oh, nobody knows. Let's make it 30 so we have no problem and no discussion later on. We have to leave this position and we have to overcome this way of thinking. We have to drive down our consumption to the material amount which we really need. This is the first segment of savings. Then there's another thing which is difficult to be touched, but it needs to be touched, and this is the level of comfort and safety. See, in Germany, if you do a building maybe out of wood, the biggest problem you have is, besides the fire thing, the acoustics. So why the acoustic? Because nobody wants to hear his neighbor. I consider this, under the aspects of, let's say, humanity and social aspects, quite critical, because this allows the people to die in their own habitation and no one will hear them with their last cry. But this is the standard, yeah. So acoustic standards, which cost a lot of money and which cause a lot of building complexity in order to overcome those acoustic bridges and however you might call them. And if you would say, this is not really necessary, it is allowed that if someone is screaming in the next apartment, that we at least hear a little bit. And this would reduce the amount of material by another remarkable, maybe two-digit number. Then there's the safety aspect. In Germany and in the Western countries, we have an absolute high level of safety. Our buildings typically never fall down compared to Bangladesh, where they fall down every year. So safety is something you need to afford, where you need to be capable to pay for it. And the people in Pakistan and Bangladesh, they cannot pay for it. So their safety margin is probably 10 by the exponent of minus 1, and we have 10 exponent minus 6. So this is also what we have to talk about. Do we have to have the same safety level for a handrail in the uppermost balcony than for a column in the ground level? Scientifically spoken, no. What are we doing? The opposite. So there's plenty of things where we can save material without stopping building. It makes the thing from the architecture and engineering approach more difficult. Let's say you have to think in more details. You have to be more careful. The contractor needs to be more careful. But this is the only way out of the problem. The only way I see, besides the option not to build anything anymore.
Which is not really an option, not to build anymore.
Yeah, there's an interesting thing. Directly after World War II, when Germany was nothing else than, let's say, completely damaged country, and people started rebuilding. There was a famous situation in Stuttgart here where they had an administration responsible for Bauschutt, building waste. And every application for a new building had to be stamped by this department. And they refused one famous architect's drawings and they said he needs too much material. Too much material to be used as a criteria to refuse the building application. I think we will face that in the next 2 years, maybe in next decade. Maybe it is called too much material consumption, or it is called too much waste production, or is it called too many emissions? The latter is the most probable one, that we have to show clearly how much emissions will this building cause in its production phase, its building phase, its use phase, and its demolition phase, the so-called end of life, even if there is no life.
So to sum it up a little, the key word here is energy. In just a decade, China has overtaken many countries when it comes to the expansion of renewable energies. But as we just learned, we shouldn't say renewable energies. So when it comes to the expansion of energies, right? And in 2020, China was responsible for almost 50% of the global capacity increase in renewable energy. There it is again. So, and we heard you say, as human beings, we don't have a problem with energy, but we have a problem with emissions. What exactly do you mean by that?
Global warming is not caused by energy. The sun is shining more than 10,000 times more energy by its radiation onto the planet than human beings need for all their functions. So we are bathing, we are swimming in energy. And we have geothermal energy, we have wind energy, we have wave energy. We have thousands of times more energy than we need to live in a super luxurious standard. Energy is not the problem. This is another of these fog bombs misleading the people out there in their industry. They all think, oh, we need to be energy efficient. I say, not me. Why should I be energy efficient? I own 160 square meters of high efficient photovoltaic. I'm producing more energy than a little power plant. So why should I be energy efficient? The important thing is I don't have a chimney on my house. I do not cause emissions in the use phase and not in the production phase. In the production phase, of course, there were some, but we tried to minimize that. So it is the emissions. And now this is interesting. In Germany, if you are an industrial company and you want to bring a car into the market, then you have to fulfill emission restrictions. Nobody is talking about energy consumption of a new car. The lawmakers are not talking about it. They talk about emissions. Now you switch the ministry on the other side of the street. This is now the building, Ministry for Building Affairs. They do not talk about emission. They talk about energy consumption. It is just the opposite. Of course, the traffic people are totally right because it is an emission problem we are facing. Global warming is an emission problem. Building industry did not really understand it yet. And the politicians are still talking about energy efficiency. But some of them now think, okay, there is a direct linear correlation between the energy use and the emissions caused. Burning stuffs and emissions caused. Okay, it is not linear, as we all know. Yeah? And why should I talk about energy efficiency when I mean emission efficiency? Why do I talk about women when I mean men? But this is what's happening.
That's a good example.
And everyone is copying that and blah, 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 and energy efficiency and so on and so on. And it will become quite clear. The Paris Treaty means nothing else than that in the year 2050 or earlier, our total energy production is the wrong word because you cannot produce energy. The making energy available is not longer based on combustion processes. If we fulfill that, then everyone will understand my question. I do not need to be energy efficient. And the question is the emissions. And then it's very interesting because if we analyze a building over all its phases from the production and erection to the use phase and then to the recycling phase, a modern building erected in Germany nowadays emits 50% of more of all its emissions in the erection phase. So why should I focus on the use phase, which is 50 years or longer, where you emit 1 over 40 over 50, which is a very tiny number per year. And why do you not focus on the erection phase where you emit 50% within 2 years at the very beginning? And we clearly showed on a scientific paper that it is absolute nonsense to proceed as we did in the last decades. And the damage of the environment caused by the emissions emitted during the construction of a building over a period of 20 to 30 years are 25 times more dangerous than the emissions emitted during lifetime. We have to put the focus on the erection of the buildings. Means we have to focus on the building materials. Where do we get them from? Does the wood come from Siberia and the granite come from China? Yeah, but this is the case. Nobody is calculating the emissions. Okay, there are some people calculating it, but it is not on the spreadsheets of the building industry. And what are you doing at the end if you repair, if you remodel, or if you turn the building down? What happens then? Actually, the building waste in Munich, when you turn down a building there, the waste is brought to South Poland. So the emissions caused by the trucks are higher than the emissions caused by the production of the concrete. So this is turning upside down, and nobody is talking about this because it is far away, and tearing building down is not of interest for architects, and engineers are not interested to talk about those things because it is not elegant and not glossy and so on and so on. But if we are conscious on what we are doing, then we have to watch it from the very first to the very last second. So this is the thing with the emissions. So we do not have an energy problem, we have an emission problem. And building industry stands for about 50 to 55% of all the emissions. There's a number cruising around stating that the building industry stands for 38%. This number is wrong. It's 50 to 55. So it's the majority.
And no one is talking about it.
I'm not even thinking about it.
Yeah. Let's move to another question. Compliance with the Paris Agreement on climate change is colliding with rising global emissions we're talking about, including in the construction sector. Current events such as the heavy rains and floods in Europe, heat waves in North America, melting permafrost, and rainforests becoming CO2 producers show us the finite nature of our world and also that the process is irreversible. The great transformation has to succeed, he said once. What will we face if it doesn't?
Okay, there are people out there which fear that they are going to get wet feet or that Netherlands will be underwater in 20 or 50 years. This might be the case and it is dramatic enough, but this is not what we should talk about. Another issue nobody's talking about. What if we do not succeed? The result is quite simple. We will face hunger and poverty in a level never seen before. And both will cause migrations and an endless number of people dying. They die by hunger because food production, crop yield is dramatically reduced by elevated temperature, as we might see it actually in the Central American areas and the Californian areas, as we see it in South Brazil. It is a reduction in crop yield. And if crop yield worldwide is reduced by overheated areas, overheating days is the term, by 20 to 30%, where should this material, this food come from? It is just not there. And there are nations which are capable to pay for this, so the prices will increase, and the ones which cannot pay, they will die by hunger. This is a very negative forecast. I'm sorry to say this, but I'm very convinced that this is what we are going to face because I have no idea, and I have plenty of fantasy. I have no idea how do you want to compensate a crop yield reduction of 40%. There's no recipe out there. And the interesting thing is that a certain number of nations are continuously increasing their food consumption. This has to be overlaid with a reduction of crop yield. And we all know that since a couple of years, the fishing industry cannot increase the fishes they get out of the seas because and so on, the situation is very well known. So the only increase in fish production is artificial fish farming. But this again is a question of money. Can you afford it? Do you have the know-how? And are the countries of Africa capable to pay for this? They are probably not. We have to face the fact that the increase of global average temperature, which is 1.5, 1.8, 2 degrees, comes along with evolvement of huge areas where we find elevated temperature for a certain period of days over the year and drought or heavy rainfall. All the three effects cause a reduction in crop yield. And we cannot turn that wheel back, not within one century. We can do whatever we are capable to do to reduce the emissions we cause, but that's it. The time CO2, for example, stays in the atmosphere is, depending on whom you ask, between 800 and 1,000 years. So it does not go away. And there is no single one technology in this world which is capable to extract CO2 in a somehow economic way from the atmosphere. There is now one plant coming up in Norway, which necessitates applause from all of us because the Norwegians take the risk and they do the investments. But if this plant really works perfectly, then we would need more than 2,000 of them to compensate the emissions we are actually doing, which is 1,300 tons of CO2 per second. If we now want to extract the CO2 from the atmosphere in order to slowly reduce the global warming, this would need another 1,000 or 2,000 factories. The question is not only, is there enough money to build them? The question is, are there enough engineers capable to design that within a short period of time? And this is the limiting factor. It is not the money factor. You can print money as we see. And if it comes about war, okay, the investment in Afghanistan, believe it or not, was $1,000 billion. If you would have taken this money to repair the world's atmosphere, we would be in another position. Nothing has been done except this Norway plant and a couple of small research projects. So the CO2 stays there and we cannot remove it. So we have to decrease the increase of the CO2 level in the atmosphere by doing everything we can. And this will help eventually a little bit to reduce this problem with reduced crop yield, but it cannot solve it. So what we at the same time need to do is be more careful with the food we are consuming. Don't throw it away. Buy and order what you are really capable to eat. Distribute the food more fairly. There is an anxiety out there that if we feed the third world nations, a term I do not underwrite, it's an arrogant term, third world nations. In fact, it turned out that the third world acts more wise than the first one. A person in Ethiopia emits 0.5 tons of CO2 per year. A US American emits 18, a European 9. So the question is, who is first? Okay, if you take the measure by the amount of emissions caused, okay, I think we all three understand what I'm talking about. The question is, who is more wise and who is acting more careful to the planet? And there we should reposition our thinking totally. But the fact of this war on food and this decrease in food supply and so on, increase in food prices, fish and meat and so on, this will come up and it will be a very difficult political situation to make any decision. What shall we do? I don't have a recipe. The only recipe I have is dampen the problem as much as you can.
But achieving all this will require a tremendous effort, not only from a sociopolitical point of view, but also from a research perspective. Where is the terra incognita in construction and what do you want for the future, Mr. Sobek?
2 years ago, I nailed 17 theses on a wall. And thesis number 17, I quoted in Latin because I wrote it in Latin, was Natura mensura est. In former times, it was God who was the being we had to adjust all our doings and believings And then it became the human being, Homo mensura est. In our times, it's ego mensura sum, it is me, it is not the human mankind, it is just me. It's a hyper-individualism. I do not care what other people suffer or experience, it's me. All those things went parallel with the dramatic increase of all our life with capitalism and the so-called market. And everyone thinks the market is a wise person somewhere in the background, like a god. And the journalists in the evening news, they say the market will regulate it and the market is wise and the market has anticipated it. This is all complete nonsense. The market has no headline and the market has no moral. The market has no objective except one, to be a trade platform for safe trading. And the objective of everything is the maximization of profit of the single participants. This has nothing to do with saving nature. In natura mensura est, my statement means, if we damage the functionality of nature as we are actually doing it, then we destroy the medium which is embedding us. If this medium, call it the uterus of human mankind, this is nature, if you destroy this, then there's no chance for the human mankind to survive. No chance. Okay, there are a couple of people from so-called elite universities. We all know their names. They even got Nobel Prizes for the thinking that you can replace natural functionalities by machines. So there is whatever, no functioning sea anymore. Then we do it all artificial. We grow the fish in an artificial basin and we manage this all and so on. What a naive position. Do you want to surround all human beings by a huge machine and replace nature by an endless number of machines which produce what we need, and we even would not know who is programming the machines?
I think no one wants that.
No way.
You could get a Nobel Prize for such thoughts. The man is well known. He got a Nobel Prize for that nonsense, clearly speaking. Sorry to say that clearly, but why should I do it in a more polite way than people probably might not understand it? It is as it is. It's the proclamation of nonsense which allows you to get a Nobel Prize. So this is what I mean with natura mensura est. This is the uppermost measure we have to fulfill. If nature does not function, then we have no chance to survive. And this will, if we take this serious, dramatically change the societal functionalities we are living in, because profit making, the profit of the individual, is not longer possible if it conflicts with the so-called profits of the nature. So then profit of the nature is higher ranked, and this will change the way we do business and we behave. But I'm very much convinced this is the only way. It will be a huge common effort, and everyone has to give something and has to reduce the level of luxury he is living in, and so on and so on.
Yeah, never tease the one who feeds you.
Yeah. So, not to end with something negative, there is light on the horizon, and what is needed is that we start walking direction horizon. The most important thing is that you know which mountain you want to climb up. What is the objective? Where is the lighting fire on the horizon? And then start walking, and you might, as a mountain climber needs to do, you climb up a mountain you have never been before. Then you have to go back for a couple of hundred meters because the way you choose was not doable. Yeah, then you have to take another way as long as you find the right way. And this is what the famous philosopher Hegel said. I state that in German, dass die Angst vor dem Irrtum der Irrtum ist. Trying to avoid an error, this is the error itself, because it limits you in proceeding. In finding the terra incognita, you see, our entire society is more or less based on a full cover insurance. Yeah? Everyone is insuring itself against anything. Ask Columbus whether he had a full cover insurance. Ask all those people, Reinhold Messmer, Marco Polo, full cover insurance? I don't think so. So we have to redefine where we stand, and we have to redefine the methods and the tools we are going to use to direction this lighting fire on the horizon. there is a chance to solve the problem, but this is only doable in a common effort. It is not a couple of old wise professors. They can't do that.
And I think that this is a very nice way to end our discussion, looking towards the horizon and thinking about your words. Mr. Zobik, thank you very much for your time, for your very clear and very honest words. I think that was really understandable for anyone, and it makes very clear what we have to think of in future.
To express what we feel like, every time we hear you speaking, we could go on listening forever. All the words are still working after hearing your point of views.
And we hope that this will work with our listeners as well.
Yeah, let's handle the problem. Let's start so that the next interview might be on an aspect which is not that dramatic and not covered with negative issues. Yeah.
Well, let's talk about sunshine energy the next time.
Designing female dresses in the way of redesigning houses. Promised?
Promised.
Yes. We're looking forward to.
All right. Gotcha. Have a nice day.
Thank you so much. You too.
Take care.
Many thanks to our listeners as well. We're looking forward to share our upcoming Jung Architecture Talks podcast with you. Tune in on jung.de/architect.